Tell me about the long day that you had in France. I don't mean long in a sense that it's long bad. Just you said you had a
Interesting day. You probably heard some people talking about that at some of these connector meetings around the world, right? Oh, Mark, you know Bill Gentry. Tell us about the long day in France.
tell us about your day, Bill. You're long.
All right, well, let's see. The long day. It's the long story too. This is about a 4-hour story, Mark. You got 4 hours?
No, I gotta go, man. Seriously,
All right, I'll try to cut it down to like 6 minutes or 8 minutes or something.
you gotta tell us the context too, where you were,
I'm on the sales visits. I go to most of
what
what I was
year is
doing
it?
when I was going to France in the later years, when my ex and I weren't traveling together that much, but we were I'm visiting. I was like the head of sales over Europe for a while. So I'm visiting all the different offices. I set up an office in Slovakia. I set up one in Warsaw, hired new reps in various countries. It was quite an interesting 5, 6 years kind of rebuilding the sales organization of Europe. But I didn't need to do anything in France because we had wonderful salespeople in France. Like I said, I love the French, so I will say nothing bad about the French. Even the bad stuff about France is good. If you'd learn to love the French. So anyhow, the long day. I'm in Bordeaux. We're in Bordeaux, which is a nice, like, it's not, it's a second tier city or something they call it. Only about 1.5 million people, I think, in Bordeaux, and it's an elegant old town. And our key sales guy in Paris, I say, tell me about Bordeaux, Jacques, and he's like, it's filled with gentry. It's filled with the gentry, which is
Whoa.
the nobles. The nobles.
Gotcha.
Why do they have so much money? It's arguably the most famous wine district in the world. So Bordeaux wine and the city, basically, I think the biggest income for that Bordeaux area is the wine. And I first learned to really drink Bordeaux wine. And to me, Bordeaux wine is basically a blend of the Merlot and the Cabernet Sauvignon grape. And there's a river that goes through the heart and the center of Bordeaux. I don't even know the name of the river, but let's call it the river that, runs by Bordeaux. And on
Sticks.
the east side, on the west side, is where the wines and I think the soil is more gravelly, and that's where all the heavy cab mixed Bordeaux come from. And on the other side is the where the Merlot based Bordeaux's come from. And that's basically how you tell the difference. And there's a difference then in Bordeaux's Haut Médoc is a famous area where it's a cab sav based grape. So we on this day, we've made some sales calls, and we're gonna at lunchtime, we're gonna walk up the famous hill of Saint-Emilion. Saint-Emilion is kind of a famous section of Bordeaux. And it's a Merlot-based section. And rather than going to all the different chateaus to taste the wine, they had set up in Saint-Emilion this walk up the hill with like 25 on the left and 25 on the right, chateaus represented in these small booths, these small little huts where you can do the tasting of their wines. It's really a great experience,
Oh.
especially at lunchtime when you've got more sales visits to make in the afternoon.
Oh my God.
So then that's it. I think it was a Friday, and that's okay on Friday. I think everybody's allowed to start drinking at for breakfast in France. They don't have that you can't drink at lunch rule. They might by now, but they didn't used to. So we're walking up with my sales guy at the time. I won't say his name so he won't get in trouble. And we're tasting the various Bordeaux's, and they say that if you get to the top, and at the top is the church, the cathedral of Saint-Emilion. If you get to the top and you're sober, you got to go back down and start over again.
That would be a long day.
So we both qualified for being not sober. So what did we do? We jumped in our car and we drove to our next sales call. And the next sales call is really quite interesting because, as you know, my ex company, the family biz, the connector guys, most of our business in Europe, especially, was aerospace based, Airbus and, you know, defense aircraft and so forth. So we went to this sales call. It's just about an hour, I think, north of Bordeaux. A famous aircraft computer manufacturer. And we have a lot of connectors in aircraft, airborne computers. And so the interesting thing about that call is that they take you into this warehouse where these racks and racks and racks of single board computers that are not enclosed by the shell of a computer. It's just a board that is functioning and everything's plugged in and everything's working. And there's several thousand of these computers. And what they represent is that every airplane that is still flying in the world, supposedly every airplane that is flying in the world at any moment, has a computer in it, and it's represented in this factory in the south of France, so that if somebody's having a problem with their computer on the airplane and they're up in the air and they're having a problem, they can call and be patched into this factory. And people can go in there and check to see what might be the problem by looking at the computer motherboard.
Wow.
It's a pretty cool concept. You never think
of it. It's got to be a pretty big building, man.
There is a live. Yeah, actually, no, because they're in racks. And these boards, at least the ones I saw, are not that big. And what are you going to say? There's maybe 2,000 different types of aircraft flying at any one time. I mean, there's not that many different aircraft that are flying. The older ones don't have computers, right?
It's only the ones that have their stuff on it, though, right?
No, anything. That was really? One of the roles that this company had was to service that part of the flight control, global flight control requirements. I mean, it was. Yeah. I was told it was every computer in the world was right there represented, but they were the world leader in making these types of onboard computers.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
So anyhow, we made this sales call. I think we were sober by the time we got to their door. We need to go drive back to Paris. All right. We're driving back to Paris. And what is so typical, because I would say every two or three trips you're going to make into France, and you drive a lot in France. The railroad system there is not so expansive that it can take you everywhere. So we're driving on, you know, one of the high speed French highways, and suddenly traffic stops. About every three trips you're going to take in France during the week, you're going to run into some kind of a strike, and it might be a trucker strike. And what they'll do is they'll block the road. How's that happened? Two or three trucks have, you know, they've broken down right on the highway, blocking traffic for hours. Wow. And they're not necessarily striking for the rights of the truckers. There might be a solidarity that the truckers have with the postal service or with the garbage collectors or the croissant manufacturing guild, you know, whatever it is, there is a solidarity. So we get stuck in this traffic jam for quite a few hours. So we're delayed. And typically when I'm staying in Paris, I stay in this area called the Latin Quarter, which is kind of a fun nightlife area. But particularly on this trip, for some reason, I chose to stay in, I think it was the which is very kind of upper snooty section of town, the high-end hotels, the high-end restaurants, et cetera, the opera house, so forth. So I'm staying at the Westin.
The Westin.
I'm expecting to arrive at 5 o'clock, and we don't arrive at 5 o'clock. We arrive at like 1:30.
Oh, in the morning?
In the morning.
Wow.
And so we're really, 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 really late. And so I've missed my opportunity to check out this part of Paris. I don't think I've maybe one other time been into that part of Paris. And the Westin is like so many of the hotels in France, period. It's an elegant old building or an old hotel that's been renovated. And the architects in Europe are phenomenal, how they'll mix the modern and the glass and the sleek and the metal with the old stone and the relief sculptures that might be built into the walls. So it was a really high class, high end hotel. And I'm checking in at 1:30, and it's, you know, it's maybe almost 2 by the time I've got, you know, everything done and I've got my bags ready and I'm going to go upstairs. And so by that time, there's no bellhop to help me because I don't think I had more than just one bag with wheels. So I'm going upstairs in the elevator to my room. It's not a super huge hotel, so it's not like the hallways are a half mile long. So I'm going upstairs, go up to whatever it is, floor 3 or 4, and I get off the elevator and it's totally black and dark because all over Europe, to save energy, they have these motion detectors that you have to move and enter into the space before the lights will come on, right? Have you ever seen that?
Yeah, they got
it. Very common in America.
Yeah, like in bathrooms and stuff like that. Now, before, because people leave the lights on all the time, so you come in, they come on, they turn off when you leave. So, yes.
Okay. All right. Well, that's all over Europe. Apartment complexes. It's everywhere. I don't know if it's a law that you have to have that, but it saves, I'm sure, a lot of energy long run. So I'm stepping off of one of the nicest the elevator in one of the nicest hotels, let's just say not in Paris, but in Europe. But I'm at this Paris Western in the nicest neighborhood, and I'm walking a few steps in the black, and then the light comes on, and I look down the hallway, and what do I see? I see a rat as big as a cat.
Oh, shit.
Standing there in the middle of the hallway. And he's looking at me like, what are you doing here? And I'm looking at him going, what are you doing here? I'm the one who paid for a room. And so he shakes his head around a little bit. There's this kind of moment, this tete-a-tete. These are a couple of big powerhouses. Who's gonna win out here? And the next thing you know, the guy dives under, unbelievably so, because I tell you what, he was, I'm not exaggerating, he's as big as a cat. He slides under the door of one of the rooms.
What?
Yeah.
Seriously. Was it your room?
Well, here's the rest of the story. I walked down the hallway. I didn't count if he was in door number 3, 4, or 5, but I walked down the hallway and I look at my key and I look over and I'm going, holy crap, he might have gone into my room. Uh-oh. And you know what? I was so tired. I didn't go downstairs and complain or anything because I didn't know what room he went into, and they would have probably laughed at me and said, there's no way we had a rat that big running around in our hallways. We're the Weston.
The guy was saying,
so I went in there and I looked, I swear I looked under the bed and I looked around in the closets to see if I could find anything, but I could not. And I've seen that how rats can squeeze themselves into the tiniest little unimaginably infinitesimally small holes and disappear. And he did that. And he didn't show his face and he didn't bother me while I was sleeping.
I thought you were going
to long day in your hand.
You woke up the next morning and the rat looked over to you and was smoking a cigarette.
Well, that's the truth of it, but I'm not going to tell you all those details.
I know you.
Let me go get a bottle. How about a bottle of wine, huh?
Let's finish
this up with a little bit more discussion on what France is most famous for.
They're a vino, man. Absolutely. I am a wine. Oh, man. You know what? I do love the good. You know what? I should say. I like a big, bold cab, right? I do. I like a big, bold cab. That's probably my favorite grape. But I also really appreciate the Bordeaux blends and the different blends. I like a blended wine, I think, way more than I like a single varietal wine, like a Cab Franc or a Cabernet or Syrah, those type of things. If they're blended correctly, and I think that's the beauty in the artwork of the wine is the different blends that they have, the different years, the different grapes, the different barrels that they use and stuff like that. But if you get a perfectly balanced Bordeaux, man, there's really not much better than that, really, because they're not sweet, they're not too dry, they're just perfect. I really like it.
They're world famous for a reason. You know, I'll say that right now I'm back to drinking French wine after doing a lot of Italian and Spanish, but now I'm drinking Rhone wines, you know, Chateau Neuf de Pape, I think. You know what a Rhone wine is? It's a blend. And it's predominantly a blend of a Grenache and a Syrah.
Yeah,
and
that's good.
Central Coast right now in California, that's the hot thing, is these Rhone type of blends with the Syrah Grenache. Okay, so what do we do to kind of cap off and say our finale moment here on the discourse on France? Bill's very brief. I think I could talk about France on and on and on and on and on, Mark. But I have right here a bottle of French wine. And this is, it's a rosé. And, you know, a lot of times if you pull and ask for a rosé in America, they're going to go, oh, you rosé, you go both ways. Ha ha. Because it's a, generally considered a sweet laced wine. But in the south of France, in the Provence area, that's where this wine is from. They make rosés. It's a red grape, and I don't know what the process is, but we've gone and done wine tasting in Provence, and so I'm going to open this up. I was tasting this a little bit. I drank a little bit. About four glasses, just getting ready for the program.
Just sampling it.
Just making sure it was right. Wanted so bad to do a red. I thought we'd do a tour of the French winemaking areas, starting up in Burgundy, the Bourgogne, and then go down to Beaujolais and across over to the Rhone, and then the Loire Valley, and then down to the big bold Gascon red wines of Southwest France.
Wouldn't that be fun to do?
Over to Provence. And the wonderful thing, and a lot of people don't know this because I'm going to say, sorry, a lot of Americans don't know much about rosé wines because they first got introduced into America as being very sweet.
Yes.
Almost like, some kind of a sweet juice.
Almost with spritzers. They used to use a lot of rosés and put like a wine spritzer type of stuff. Yeah. Rosé wine spritzers.
Yeah.
Bastardized it. You know what I mean?
Ruined it. Ruined the whole image of rosés for many, many years. But in France, the rosés are not sweet. In Italy, they have rosés. They have rosés out of Spain, and they're all generally considered dry. Some are very dry.
I'm going to interrupt you.
What the people drink in August and in the hot summer months in Europe is the rosé.
What is more popular in France? And this is just your opinion. You could say red wine or white wine.
Oh my God! There's no question that red wine is. I mean, so many French people will say white wine. That isn't even wine. That we don't even say that again. Not in front of me. Don't you ever call white wine wine?
I got you. All
There's
right.
No question that I don't know what the actual numbers are, but I would say in France, 70% of the wine that gets drank is red.
Do you like German wine at all? Do you like their wines at all? Like Gerzenwein?
Well, they like their sweet wines. No, there's some great wines out of Switzerland and Germany, but they're usually for local consumption. They don't have a huge market. There was I bought a few cases of this. I found it down in Tucson once, what was called a Pinot Meunier. And I'm sure I'm wrong. It's generally a red, very light red grape that's used. 95% they say gets used for champagne.
Really?
I guess they grow a lot of it in Germany. And I guess they send it down to the Champagne district of France, but sometimes they'll bottle it under the Pinot Meunier grape name, and I loved it. I loved it.
Do you like champagne?
Well, I'm not a huge fan of champagne, but I loved this grape. It was very light. I mean, it was even lighter than a Pinot Noir. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, I do like Pinot Noirs too, very much. That's one of my favorites. And I think that. To me, they're almost.
Mark, you don't mind if I pour another drink? You want me to pour you a drink over there, Mark? Here,
no,
here you go, Mark. Oh, there you go. Yeah, enjoy.
I like.
Hey, look at me. They're pointing at my head now too.
Yes,
Michelangelo's.
I like the Pinot Noirs, and lately, and again, this is not French wine, but I also love the Amaronis too. I just absolutely love.
Oh.
Them.
One of the best wines in the world. All right, Lil, why don't we go ahead and sign off? Do
okay.
Vive la France. J'aime beaucoup le pays de France.
You know what?
La campagne de France. La jante de France.
do a toast and you know, you know, before we leave,
vote de sante, a vote de sante pour tout le monde, tout le ami de moi, la belle vie en français.
There you go.
That was a total destruction of the French language, but they all understood. The thing is that they will all understand, and that's what matters. So thank you very much, Mark, and the audience. Vive la France.
Okay.
Long live the French. Adios. Au revoir, messieurs. That's it for now. We hope you enjoyed listening to Earth to Bill. Thank you for tuning in. Your support means the world to us and helps us to continue bringing you fun, informational content for your enjoyment. Now let me tell you about our charity, A World of Difference. This fantastic charity is making a real difference in the lives of children around the world by providing them art education. We believe in the power of art to change lives. If you're interested in supporting this charity, please visit our website, awadcharity.org, and consider making a donation, please. Thanks again for checking out our show. Bye.